Phil Henry Show. I'm Margaret Gray, along with Bud Dickman. Oh, not this slut.
What's wrong with... Wait.
This is the slut.
This is General Galen Shaw. We'll get to your problem, Margaret, in a minute. General Galen Shaw, the Phil Henry Show. Come a little bit closer. Oh, yeah, baby.
I don't like this. Let me
tell you how I want it. Yeah!
Would you turn this goddamn... Listen, no, go ahead. Leave it up instead. Do you hear how she's asking for it? She's asking a man... Oh, my God.
I think this young lady is wonderful.
Oh, God, she's disgusting.
Phil Henry Show. Boy, we have got one fucked up studio here this morning.
And what is that? So, in other words, Phil, you're picking up where this trollop is leaving.
I'm not picking up where anybody's leaving off. Thank you very much. That's in this moment, Adrenalize. It's one of our favorite bands.
I just think she's an exciting young woman.
I agree with the general. Very exciting.
Oh, yeah, you agree with the general. She's very exciting. She puts it out there. She looks like she's had a breast job.
No, she doesn't, Miss Henry.
All right, maybe she did. Maybe it's all part of, there's a package. You got to know how to market things these days, man. What do you think? Rock and roll, metal, whatever. Do you think all of this stuff is just organic right out of the garage? And, ooh, look at this. We just happen to have a lead singer who's a chick with large breasts, great legs. She dresses like some slut. I'm kidding. No, she doesn't.
Well, yes, she does.
On a couple of their publicity shots. In other words, it's all about the present. Remember what Schindler said? I don't work. Not for me. No work. Presentation.
Oh, great. So we bring up what is wrong with you this morning?
Yeah, Phil, what's with the Holocaust reference?
I don't know. I was just thinking of Oscar Schindler, what he said at the... Never mind.
Who's Oscar Schindler?
The guy with the hamburger, right?
The hamburger?
Oh, you poor man. You think Oscar Mayer. Is that what you think?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought, Edward.
Oscar Schindler was the guy from World War II. Oscar Mayer.
You know something? Every time we have a reference around here to a dick... Excuse me, Margaret.
Would you watch your language?
No. Hold on. Every time we have a reference around here to a dick or the Holocaust, Oscar Mayer is inevitably brought up. And I would think by now... They are so sick and tired of what you've done to their good name on this program, Mr. Henry, they will sue you into another era, into another epic. And that's my opinion.
I don't think so, General, and I can't believe that you would take such a ridiculous attitude. The show, after all, is a satire.
Oh, there you go right there. That's how you people get away with it. Now, listen, you know I like you, Phil, but I don't like the fact that you would use the name of a company that has employees going back... hundreds of years, for all I know. How old is this Oscar Schindler Meats?
Oscar Schindler Meats is the one that makes a hot dog.
Not Oscar Schindler Meats, you clowns. Oscar Mayer is who Phil is talking...
I'm talking about how... I'm not talking about anything other than Oscar Schindler. I don't know what the hell it is, what bug got up your ass, General. I ain't talking about Oscar Mayer. And I do not think that this radio program in any way has affected the good reputation, the hard work... and the tremendous success story that the Oscar Mayer Company has had. Are you serious?
Well, let me ask you this then. Why is it every time someone's talking about a dick, you know?
Would you please watch your language?
I'm trying. Why do they say Oscar Mayer?
Because these two guys have got minds that are the size of walnuts. How about that?
Yeah, you talk much, try to spit it out.
Yeah, I'm standing all like blue, blue, blue.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what? It's been one of those mornings, all right? By the way, before we even got rolling here, what I was trying to say is that we got all kinds of technical issues. I had, as I mentioned, I said Elaine and Ian were in here.
Oh, here we go again with the equipment. Is this what we're going to do, another 15 minutes on that?
Yep. Some point you got to get past it and just move on.
I ain't moving on from anything. Now, hold on for a minute. We're digitizing our studio. See, I can hear a hum right now. We're digitizing the studio. The sooner the better. The sooner we get rid of these computers, the better. These computers are all garbage. Do you understand? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, you're looking at me, Phil.
I'm just saying, these computers are all garbage. I want them all taken out, and I want them all run over. I want them destroyed. I want to set fire to them. I don't know what I want to do. Just get them out of here, okay? They're noisy. It's garbage. And the sound cards in them, what I'm beginning to understand here is that we got to change out the sound cards.
Phil, I don't know that the audience understands a sound card, you know, from playing cards.
Yeah, or from House of Cards, you know, the movie.
Yeah, that's great. So,
well, you called it the card game on Twitter, didn't you?
I was fooling around. It's called House of Cards, and I called it Game of Cards. The point that I am endeavoring to make is that analog don't make it no more no how. Okay, dig me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Little Abner.
I'm just telling you, it ain't making it around here in this studio. It's noisy as hell. It's garbage. This Mackie board, God bless everybody at Mackie. I'm going to mention all of the products that we use that we were happy with. Mackie, fantastic. TriCaster is okay, except I don't like the guys that sold it to me. All of these computers, SHIT, and that spells doo-doo, okay? The Brother computer, fantastic. In fact, this Brother computer is the Brother printer. This is the best printer we've ever had. We've spilled coffee on it. We've kicked it. I have urinated on it. I have beat it.
You have not done those things.
What are those stains there?
Yeah, that's pee.
That's not pee. I'm kidding about that. That's coffee.
Well, you didn't do it on purpose, did you?
I didn't say I did it on purpose. I'm just telling you that this is what we've done to this Brother printer. And that baby just keeps humming right along. It's a beautiful thing. What else do we like around here? This Lasco fan, it ain't bad. These cameras, okay? I like these Sony cameras that we have. We have a Sony and we have a Canon. They're all, both of them great. They have never failed me. Never failed me in the 4 years. Any piece of equipment around here that has failed us is garbage.
Oh, wait a minute, Phil. Don't you understand? Some things.
No. I ain't understanding nothing, okay? I got better things to do with my life and my time than taking stuff in and getting it fixed every The TriCaster, that's what I want to mention. The TriCaster has failed us twice, okay? So, no, I take it back. This TriCaster is shit. Excuse my language, okay?
Oh, a moment ago you said it was great, except...
No. Now I'm saying both the TriCaster and the company that sold it to us is a piece of shit. And I'll say something else, too. This, we should never have bought this. We should have bought what... Now they've got TriCasters that are 10 Gs, and I got this thing foisted on me for 40. And on top of everything else, those clowns that sold me this, this isn't even our TriCaster. Ours is sitting there in a repair shop, and it should have been repaired a month ago, but they're waiting around for me to buy another one? You keep right on waiting. I ain't buying it from you guys. Not going to happen. See, this is what happens when you fuck with me, all right? First of all, I make you famous. Second of all, I ain't going to bring my business back to you. It's as simple as that. This isn't about a piece of equipment failing, folks. This isn't about a company this is about a company that sold me something that they did not have to sell. They could have given me a better deal on something else. But instead, they saw me come and they decided that they would sell me this. And then they would try and get another piece of equipment out of it. What they've gotten is the following thing. They've pissed me off. I have now, I think I've mentioned Key Code Media to millions of people, and we'll continue to do that in Burbank. Your work sucks. The TriCast is a piece of shit. I'll buy one much, much cheaper from someone else. I'm not necessarily saying TriCaster, in essence, is a bad piece of equipment. I'm saying $40,000 for this mother that has failed me twice is too much. You guys sitting on your fucking thumbs out there, I know that I'm, you know...
Well, your language is absolutely unacceptable. Now, I'm telling you that.
I'm just telling you that you're going to have to live with it when I get pissed off. Okay?
First of all, you start out with, come a little bit closer. You can hear the woman's... You can almost hear...
You can almost hear what?
You can almost hear her thighs sticking together.
Oh, my Christ.
I didn't say that. Let the record show you said it.
I'm getting up. I'm going to get myself an orange juice. No, I'm not going to the bathroom.
I was going to say, there's fresh towel, there's baby wipes in there and everything like you asked.
Don't tell people. God damn it.
Did you ask him to get baby wipes?
Maybe I did. I didn't ask him to...
Don't tell the whole world that, bud, okay?
Why not? Nothing. There's nothing illegal about the wipe.
Well, if you're going to get wipes, you might as well get those, you know.
Would you guys knock out? She doesn't want you to talk about it. All right.
Why don't you want to talk about a baby wipe?
Phil has told you now twice. I would appreciate it if you would stop telling everyone what my preferred ass... No, never.
So you are wiping now with baby wipes.
Go to hell.
God, she gets pissed off really, really easily, and I don't blame her. I would, too. All right, so welcome to the program. We have Dr. Jim Sadler is going to join us on the very, very tragic... is it Dr. Jim Sadler, or is it...
That'd be Pastor William Rennick on a whirlwind vacation.
Pastor William Rennick on a whirlwind vacation. We also have Dr. William Boone, who will be joining us, and he will talk about a new book he's written, and it's called... I don't know what it's called... It's a history book, right?
Yeah, this is Dr. William Boone has written a book, Phil, on the military maneuver of Nathanael Greene against Lord Cornwallis in the Revolutionary War at Guilford Courthouse, and a little-known fact of that pursuit and eventual victory by Nathanael Greene and the United States Continental, you know, whatever the hell it's called.
What's the name of the book?
I don't know.
Okay.
You can find out the name of the book.
Yeah, that'd be great. Find out the name of the book.
Well, we didn't know that if you wanted that or not.
Generally, if a guy writes a book, you're going to want to find out what the name of the book is, don't you?
Yes, you can find that out. We didn't know you needed it right away. Jesus, hey.
Yeah, what's the rush?
Yeah, what's the rush?
The rush is the guy's going to be... Oh, man. All right, so we have that story. And also, I want to kick off here with this kid, the stowaway kid, on this jetliner. This apparently was some kid that snuck up into a wheel well and made his way all the way to... Hawaii, and the kid wasn't destroyed by the, you know, the prey. I mean, it was 38,000 feet, so there was some place there in the wheel well where the kid was able to stick himself and was safe. And so we're going to have Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy, I think, on with us to talk about that. And I wanted to also tell everybody, just as a side note here, that Manchester United has fired their manager, David Moyes. Now, this may not be big news to most American sports fans because there's not a lot of football, or if you will, soccer, fans in the United States. There's more and more, but it's big, big news in the world of soccer, especially those of us that are fans of the Barclays Premier League, which is the British league. David Moyes was the manager of my favorite team, Everton.
Now, you were going to tell us why you're an Everton fan.
I will. But I just want to say that David Moyes was their coach. And unlike a lot of Everton fans, which I can't call myself a typical Everton fan because I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground, okay?
Well, I'm glad that you admit that. The best thing for an American soccer fan is to admit he's a clown and a clod and a mental deficient and that you're learning, you see?
Okay, great. Then I will do that. But I always felt that it was kind of, you know, I felt good for David Moyes that he got probably the greatest job in all of soccer. It was to be the manager of Manchester United. Manchester United was the defending league champion. Sir Alex Ferguson had retired. He had managed that team to spectacular success. And not to keep beating this into the ground, but I think it's worth mentioning that the most valuable sports franchise on Earth, on the planet Earth, more valuable than the New York Yankees, more valuable than, I don't know who, you know, the LA Dodgers, you know, in our mind, the most valuable sports franchise, we would think would be the Yankees, let's say. Manchester United has got them beat by $1 billion at least. Manchester United at last report was worth somewhere in the neighborhood of, get ready, $5 billion.
Yeah, are you talking about a soccer team, for Jesus' sake?
Yes, a soccer team. So, $5 billion. They're owned by the Glazer family in Tampa. I should say the Glazer family on the planet Earth as well, but I think this is the same family that owns the Tampa Bay Buccaneer football team. And they are a phenomenal story. They are so valuable, and advertisers and sponsors so want a piece of that team that they have sold advertising space on their warm-up jerseys. So, in other words, when the players come out onto the pitch, as they call it in the world of soccer.
Now what do they call it?
They call it the pitch.
No, that's instead of the field.
The pitch. What?
Yeah, it's called a pitch because they pitch.
They pitch.
It's what they call it. Who knows why? Well, when they come out onto the pitch to warm up...
Why don't you just call it a field?
Well, Margaret, I would think that you, being the liberal and respecting the cultures of the world, you know...
Oh, Phil, it's soccer, Phil. It's not a culture. God.
Margaret, now, you have to respect the language and the way that they do it in other places.
Yes, you do. I agree. I didn't know that it held for... All right, the pitch.
So anyway, when they come out onto the pitch and warm up, they're wearing warm-up jerseys. They're not wearing the jerseys that they wear in the game. They're not going to go out onto the pitch. They're not going to go out there and start practicing in their game jerseys and make those sweat-soaked and stink to high heaven and very uncomfortable to wear and make them heavy and so forth. So they have their practice jerseys. Well, they have sold advertising on those as well. So it's a phenomenal thing. Now, one thing that can be argued is that there's no advertising that there's not none of that kind of advertising in American sports.
Well, they say that right there. I was going to say that. I'll bet you the American teams would earn money far beyond anything any mortal man has seen in this or any other dimension. You see what I'm saying, Margaret? You were talking about a tear in the dimension.
Are you? What are you talking about? The small hand that groped me?
The what?
Let me do it, okay?
Well, what is she saying?
You guys were talking about a tear in the dimension where a small devil hand came and groped Margaret's thigh?
Jesus, what the... What are you talking about?
Yesterday's show is what I'm talking about. But the general is saying that...
Will you allow me?
No, because we're late for the break right now. All right, we'll be right back here on the Phil Henry Show, and I'll get back into... The point is, I'm not going to get back into this. The point that I'm trying to make on this here ding-dang show is that the damn, teams here in America would probably make a hell of a lot more bread were they allowed to have advertising on their ding-dang stinking jerseys, all right?
That was the point that I was trying to make, and I was interrupted. What is this?
This is bumper music. We're leading into another break.
Oh, my. Oh, okay, Phil. What bug crawled up your ass and went to sleep this morning? And by the way, I don't mind if people know that I use baby wipes. Yes, I wipe my ass with baby wipes. There, are you happy? It doesn't bother me. I would recommend it for all of you out there. Well, never mind.
Yeah, never mind. Too many people coming and a going, in and out of my life.
In the night, in the day, I got to make it on my own. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico in Southern California. I'm General Galen Shaw. Go ahead. Make a move. Any kind of a move. Yeah, right there. That's the one. You're dead.
I'm Margaret. Hold on.
Margaret's gagging right now.
You dirty little cow. I'm Margaret Gray. I use. I'm not going to do it. Somebody. I use Johnson & Johnson ass wipe.
Please stand by for more of The Phil Henry Show.
Complicate the matter, playing on the wheel. Coming up next is William Boone, author of a book on what day on a Revolutionary War. With the ship into the bottom like a stone. Falling off a ladder, holy water, hell, how folding like a jackknife. But the truth to myself.
Somebody. That was really sexy and everything. Welcome back here, Phil Henry Show. Now here, Phil.
Thank you. Who's that?
That's some new announcer we're going to try out. His name's Terry. Come on in, Terry.
Hi.
Terry's new announcer.
How you doing, Terry?
Hi.
Well, you're doing a good job.
Thank you. Just really enjoyed it.
Do that again. That was who?
And that was a song called Rival Sons, and that was Open My Eyes here on Phil Henry Show. Now here, Phil.
Okay, Terry, thank you very much.
Can I just say something?
Go ahead.
Does he have a speech impediment?
No more than you do.
I got it.
Let go of him, Margaret.
Rip your throat out.
Come here, bud.
What did I do? Yeah. God damn, that really hurt bad.
I slapped your hand.
So?
All right, so... Thanks a lot, Terry. Everything's good.
It's all right?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. You're great, man.
Well, he does have a little bit of a speech impediment, but that's all right. That's what we do around here, so I'm not complaining, ladies and gentlemen. Most of the things that are done on the Phil Henry Show have to do with that kind of... There's always...
All right, we're not doing too good this morning, are we?
No, I don't think you are. You've carved this a new ass from beginning to end on this program this morning. I'm General Galen Shaw. Your move.
All right, then I won't make my move. Anyway, Manchester United fires manager David Moyes. Manchester United Soccer Club abruptly fired its manager David Moyes 10 months after he replaced team mate Bob Wintcup.
Don't lose this guy.
He's a cat that was the manager of the team. It's kind of like the coach, except it's like in baseball, they call it a manager. Now, the team's current stars include England's Wayne Rooney, Robin van Persie of the Netherlands, David Beckham, perhaps the world's most famous soccer star of recent times, because he married a member of the Spice Girls and because, well, he's good.
Where did David Beckham wind up?
David Beckham wound up in the French league, playing for Paris Saint-Germain, PSG.
Excuse me, I do the French, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet you do.
You know what, I'm going to go home.
Oh, sit down, Margaret.
I'll bet you do. And what is that supposed to mean?
Margaret, you know,
what does that mean, I'll bet you do?
You're very educated.
I'm giving you a chance, General.
You're a very educated woman, and you do the French accent really good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, I'll accept that for now.
Yeah, but Margaret, you know...
Okay, are we done having our feelings hurt?
I was going to say I'm the one that does the French accent. Now, what's the name of the team?
Paris. Here, I'll do it like you want me to. Paris Saint-Germain.
There you go. It's Paris Saint-Germain.
Right.
That's what Phil already did.
I'm doing it now.
All right, Margaret, you did it very well. Paris Saint-Germain?
Yes. And that is the name of the what? What is that?
That's the name of the football club there in Paris. I think they got a couple of them. But that's one of them, and it's their professional team, and it's a badass team. I mean, it's their badass team there in Paris. Now, what happens in Europe is, and it's quite exciting, I think, where they have what's called a Champions League. You can win outright your national league, whichever league that is. In England, it's the Premier League. In Scotland, it's the Scottish Premier League, if you can believe that. Scotland has its own league, which I understand. Long time tradition in Scotland is the Scottish Premier League, especially teams like... Celtic.
Well, no one was asking you about Scotland.
Well, I'm talking about Scotland, okay? Because it's an amazing situation up there. The kids in Scotland, when you talk to them about football or soccer, they know their stars in Scotland. They couldn't give, I mean, they wouldn't wipe with the guys they have down in...
In Britain?
Yeah, they don't even wipe. Nah, I'm just kidding. I don't know what they do. So anyway, the point being that they have a Champions League. Now, when you win your league, then you play the European teams outright. So there's a... There is an outright Champions League trophy that's given to the team in Europe or whichever teams they admit into this Champions League to those teams that win that league. And there are multiple divisions, and each division contains teams from each of these different leagues. La Liga, okay.
Now, that rings a bell. Is that Spanish for something?
I think La Liga is the Spanish league, yeah.
What is the Parisian League? The French, I would imagine the French football, FFL.
No, it's not the French Football League. It's...
Oh, and then you think, well, what is it, Phil?
I don't know. It's something like League something. And then in Italy, they got Linguini.
Yeah, it's the Linguini League.
The Linguini League. You two guys are a disgrace to everything that ever... It's probably something along the lines of Liguana, or I don't know.
The Iguana League.
Yeah, sure, it's the Iguana League.
You know, it's embarrassing to sit and listen to a bunch of people that really would do better at Goodwill Industries than sitting...
Well, you know what, Margaret? If you know how to pronounce it, why don't you tell us?
I don't know. I know it's Italiana. It's probably this. It's probably Italiana, la la lulu, gudulu, cucu. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
At least I tried, goddamn it.
It's the Italian. And then they have Bundesliga. What do you think that is?
What is that?
Bundesliga. What do you think that is?
What do you mean, Bundesliga? What do you think that is? Is that all one sentence?
Yes. What's the Bundesliga?
Well, Bundesliga...
That's the Liga from Bund.
Yeah, is that the Bund League?
Is that the Bund League? Yeah, in a matter of speaking. Bundesliga. What country is Bundesliga?
I don't think you're pronouncing that right. Otherwise, I'd know that right out.
Or maybe I'm not, but the first word right there, Bund, ought to tip you off. Now, what is it?
Don't talk to me, Phil, like I'm a student in your classroom.
I'm sorry. What would you mind telling me?
If this is that Italian? That's the Italian league.
No, that's not Italian. German. That's the German league.
Oh, who gives a hot hole? Who squeezes one out and flushes after that? Are you kidding?
Oh, come on, Margaret. The Bundesliga is the German league. And by the way, they have some of the best teams in that league. They got, Krautenheimer. I don't know the name of the teams, you know.
What is Krautenheimer?
No, they got the Neil Bortz,
Neil Bortz, is that a man or is that a city?
That's a man, but it could be a city.
I think it's also a city.
Yeah, so, they have Dortmund and they have Deutsch, you know, like that.
Look at you carving it up.
Well, you don't even know what Bundesliga is, okay?
Oh, my God, Phil, you got all... Yeah, you know.
I'm saying you got to calm down.
I'm calmed down. I'm calmed way down, man. So, yeah, so those are the leagues of Europa, and they got all kinds of stuff going on over there. The reason why I'm an Everton fan is because those were the guys that saved me from a beating in Liverpool years ago. They were Everton fans, and as I was walking into a Liverpool wine bar with an Everton scarf on, these guys from Everton grabbed me and pulled me aside and said, "Hey, mate, you're going to go in there, you probably get your ass kicked. If you want to come over here to our wine bar across the street, you can do that." And so I did.
Oh, that's the Liverpudlian accent, isn't that?
I don't know, but so you get your ass beat in there. So I went across the street with these guys, and we proceeded to get just shit-faced on this red eye that those guys drink over there. They had these wine bars up and down the street.
And you said that was on Penny Lane. Now, what's the significance of that?
That was the big song by the Beatles, General.
Oh. And the Beatles are from Liverpool.
Yes. And they did a song called Penny Lane.
It went like this.
Sing it, Ms. Gray.
I'm going to sing as Penny Lane. On the street there is a carpenter. Lee-dee-dee. Do you know the song?
It rings a bell.
Yes, it goes, "And Penny Lane, I go down the street to get a haircut," something.
Yeah, it's just the sights and the sounds of Penny Lane.
I'll do it. It's the sights and the sounds of Penny Lane. And...
Uh-huh.
And so they'll sing, "And the partridge for a queen." Do you know that one?
Yeah, I remember that. That's a line that they have in that song, yeah.
And the shopkeeper looks mean and lean. He's on lean cuisine. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And then they have the Oh, it's lovely. It's just a delightful song all about the Penny Lane.
Yeah, it's Penny Lane. And we were there. And then we went, they gave us a tour of the whole thing. You know.
Now, this is when you went on the rock tour with Murray and his girlfriend, right?
Yeah. Well, we went with KLSX Radio. And that was very interesting. And then we went to the section of town where Ringo was from. I think I've told this story. It's a great story, though. The three of the Beatles grew up in relative middle-class, comfortable surroundings. George, John, and Paul. John grew up in his Aunt Mimi's house, which is a two-story home, still there. Very lovely home, has a private driveway and hedges around it. I would say that it's probably one of the larger, not one of the larger homes there, but maybe it occupies a space bigger than most of these row houses. And Paul grew up in a row house, but it's a very nice middle class. And George, the same thing. But you go to Ringo's neighborhood, and it was just a slum. It was, in fact, it was part of the... area in Liverpool in the 80s where there were massive urban riots, and like two blocks were burned to the ground. And I told the story once, which was gives you all you need to know about the British, that the street was completely burned to the ground except for one thing, and that was the pub.
Oh, they left the pub standing. Oh, my God, they left the pub standing.
Yeah, that'll people go in and have a drink.
Yeah, if you get done burning stuff down.
How do you like that, huh?
Yeah, they did. They literally, bud, yeah. Okay, we're all done rioting. Now let's go get a pint, you know.
Well, did the police allow them to do that?
Margaret, it's a riot. The cops are probably staying as far back from that as they can until things get chilled out. You know, what are they going
to
do?
What do you mean until things get chilled out? They're the ones to chill things out.
Well, I don't know how they dealt with it. Maybe they brought the troops in, for all I know. But nonetheless, yeah, it was... everything was gone from this street except this one building, the pub. And apparently, then, and as the story went, they were about ready to set fire to it when someone said, no, it's the pub, don't burn that, you know. So they moved on to the next building.
And the poor sucker next door that probably had some... I bet you the guy next door had things like baby clothes and little baby bonnets... Man, they torched that thing. God damn.
What is funny about that?
I'd like to know that.
How do you know, man? You don't know that happened.
Well, I mean, stands to reason, Mr. Henry.
It doesn't stand to reason anything. It stands to reason, Mr. Henry. What does?
If they didn't burn down a pub, they'd probably burn down a baby bonnet company.
What about that?
What do you mean they probably burned down a baby bonnet company? What's the odds, man, of a baby bonnet company sitting next door to a pub?
I'm just telling you, Phil, you're all ready to forgive and forget what the scum did on that day, but I won't. Wait a minute, why am I upset?
Yeah, why are you upset? You don't live over there or anything. What do you care about baby bonnets?
How do you know? Maybe I've got stock. You don't know that.
All right, so it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show here. Coming up next is William Boone, the author of a book whose title we have no idea what the title of the book is.
I can ask him when we go on at the break and I go on hold.
Yeah, you ask him when we go into the break, bud, and you go on hold, whatever that means. So that's coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And, of course, we're online at Listen Live and TuneIn. So if you're traveling about and all that there, you can listen to us live and mobile at TuneIn, live and mobile and Listen Live. And, of course, the podcast drops later today. Phil Henry Show, be right back.
Oh, that's what you call hitting the post, right?
I'm going to give some disc jockey lessons around here, man, because some of you cats just... No way.
This is the Phil Henry Show, brought to you by Rogue Baby Bonnets and More. Rogue Baby Bonnets and More. They were in Liverpool, England, but because of the very unfortunate arson investigation that's still going on, it might have something to do with the fact that there was a riot on that street, and that they saved the pub but burned the baby bonnet store. God damn.
That's pretty cold shot.
Rogue Baby Bonnets. Visit them now. A bonnet is in your future, whether your head's the size of a baby's or a full-grown man. Rogue Baby Bonnets look good on any occasion.
This is General Galen Shaw announcing.
Stick around. The Phil Henry Show going to be bright back here at Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com.
A lot of people are you going to play music on the show, or are you just playing little bits and pieces like that?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm not. This is still a spoken word thing. What I don't want to have happen is I don't want anybody thinking that we got to play music. You know, the radio industry, the radio business, the radio, whatever this thing is, the podcast. We come from an industry that was so down on talent. I'm talking about the radio industry now. This is a completely different thing we're doing here. And the only thing we're doing different is that it's a different platform, media, whatever you call it. But the radio industry was so down on talent that they couldn't imagine a show without music, being full songs, not just as atmosphere or bumper music. Nonetheless, having been a disc jockey and a lover of music, perhaps we are prone on this program, in the words of Herb Sewell,
Well, in the words of Herb Sewell, I think I'll go catch me a 12-year-old. Excuse me.
Oh, my God.
No, that's what you said.
What, are you going to go catch a 12-year-old?
What did you say?
Nothing.
No, you said something. What did he say?
Back off, Margaret.
He said, what did you say?
Say you're going to go catch a 12-year-old?
Get off of him now.
In the real world, he ain't going to save you.
Yeah,
in the real world, he's not going to save you.
You know, that whole thing about in the real world, this is the real world here.
I'm not talking to you, Phil. This is the real world heel.
Yeah, Phil, you kind of, your tongue got wrapped around your...
Like your tongue got wrapped around it, Phil.
Yeah, okay, in the real world, this is the real world.
What is the real, this? Give me a break. Listen, homeboy, I'm going to go wipe.
Yeah, you do that.
I'll kick you.
Hey!
Gotcha. In the real...
Yeah, in the real world, I ain't gonna save him. This is the real world. You know, this is... Everything is the real world. Everything is the real world. You can't say in the real world... What most people are saying when they say in the real world is they're saying, if you were on my turf, well, but you're not. That's the mistake you made, homeboy. I'm not on your turf. You're on my turf now. So the real world is this world. So, talking to people say, in the real world, that or this or that, this is the real world. The real world is where you find yourself. Because I got news for you. If your ass is done away with in whatever world you are in, you have just experienced the grand design of the real world. I keep thinking about Lil Wayne, who I like him, but he was in a deposition and he looks at that attorney and says, you're in the real world, he ain't going to save you. Well, you're in his world now, dummy. You're in his world now. And in that world, if they take you into a courtroom, and that's the real world too, and they sue you, and that's the real world too, and you wind up paying $10, $20 million, and guaranteed that's the real world, guess what? You just got hit with the real world. Now, what are you... Now, your world that you're talking about, the real world, he isn't going to find his way down to whatever shit-can world you live in. He's not going into the VIP of any club where you're popping bottle, whatever the hell it is you're doing, Wayne. He is going to be where he is. He's not going to make the mistake that you made, which is wandering into your world. Now, I know that what I'm saying is dismissed by a great many, but what I'm saying is true. And so...
Where did this come from?
Margaret talking about in the real world, he ain't going to save you.
Well, I wasn't talking about some God almighty, Phil.
Yeah, just start crying.
I'm not talking about some bar fight.
Well, I'm talking about the real world. As long as you want to talk about the real world, this is the real world.
The real world that I know, he, that over there, the one that's sitting there, is he scratching his chin? Look at his face. You keep smiling and...
Hey.
The real world he isn't going to win in. My world, my rules. Hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
My world, my rule.
Yeah, okay, Margaret. God. Talk about thug.
What are you saying?
You're coming off like a thug the way you talk. I'm going to get on here, Mr. Warren Boone. Mr. Boone is the author of a new book on the American Revolution, and he joins us by way of our newsmaker line. He is in New York City at the book fair there on Times Square. Not on Times Square, but I think near Times Square there. And a very pleasant... Where are you? At the Fornley Hotel?
Right, Bill. Right now, that's where we're signing copies of our book and meeting a lot of people. I'm very happy to... I'll be meeting so many people. I didn't know that many people could find us, particularly since we have not settled on a title for a book. That's probably why you're having a difficult time with that.
Are you saying you do not have a title for your book yet?
No, we don't. And I'm not quite sure how that happened. They had been brought in the editors, and they finished editing the book, and they said that it's not going to be necessary. So,
what's not necessary? Having a title for a book?
It's not necessary to have the title of the book right now, but they had said that there would be, at some point, they would have to put a title on it. Right now we're selling the book, and there's no title for the book, so I'm not sure.
Okay, that's great. So getting back here to the book that you wrote, this is about the retreat of Nathaniel Green across some river in North Carolina, right?
That's right. Nathaniel Green had engaged Lord Cornwallis, and actually Nathaniel Green and Dan Morgan both had engaged British troops, one of which was Tarlin, who was the character from the Mel Gibson movie, if you remember, The Patriot. And Lord Tarlin was the character from that book who was very brutal and wound up hurting a lot of people and essentially doing a lot of very despicable things in the name of the king. And so they, they really wanted to neutralize this guy. And in the movie The Patriot, you see where Mel Gibson's character, which is based on another guy, does just that. But in this particular, in reality, Dan Morgan defeated Lord Tarlin at the Battle of Cow's Pen, and then Dan Morgan began his retreat to meet up with Nathaniel Green. As they retreated, they were being pursued by Lord Cornwallis. It was then that the general, General Nathaniel Green of the Continental Troops, asked a Polish engineer who was a volunteer member of the Continental Army to map out all of the rivers between themselves and the rest of the Continental troops, and also to make sure that they got a hold of all of the boats, all of the craft that could get the troops across the rivers. He did just that, and eventually on May the 23rd, 1781 or something, the date isn't right, I'm just using the date to make it so it sounds, so it flows.
Well, what was the date?
I don't know.
What kind of a book is this? You haven't got the name of the book, and you don't know dates.
I know the dates. I right now I don't have it offhand. But it was...
Well, this was a famous battle.
It was not a battle. It was when they went across the river.
Okay, so this is who? This is Nathaniel Green?
It's Nathaniel Green. It's Dan Morgan or Dan Marino. It's not Dan Marino, I know he...
Dan Marino was the quarterback of the Miami... Are you kidding me or something?
No, I'm not, Mr. Henry. I'm in the middle of God knows how many people here at a book signing. Forgive me, I'm actually now... They've moved us into the bowling alley. I'm signing books in the bowling alley, so I'm feeling a little insecure about the area that we're in. I hope you...
What, are you at a book fair or a bowling alley? That's the question.
I'm at a bowling alley. I was at the book fair that moved us across the street to make room for another author who has more people.
All right. Okay, so let's just get back to this book that you wrote, that you don't have a title for, and it's about these troops that are going across the river, but you don't really know the date that they went across the river.
I don't know the date, but I can tell you that they were Continental troops. And all I'm trying to say, and the whole reason why I wrote the book, is because when they went across the river, the British Army arrived just after the last of the Continental troops had made it across the river. And when they looked across the river and they saw the Continental troops, they realized that they had arrived too late.
Now, you're saying that the Continental troops did something, though, to mock the British?
They did. And this is the point of the book, that these Continental troops turned after they'd made it across the river. And keep in mind now that the Continentals had made away with every craft, every boat, every vehicle they could have used to get their troops across the river. So the British didn't have anything. All they were on horseback looking across this river at a Continental troops who had made it over, and the Continentals then proceeded to mock the British. Now, what makes this very interesting is because the legend would have it, and I don't know that there's been any independent verification of this, but there were troops there that said they saw His Excellency, which was generally what you referred to the American Commander-in-Chief George Washington as. It was His Excellency. It was a very standard greeting in those days. There is anecdotal information that George Washington was there. And as the Continental troops turned and made this mocking demonstration, Washington glanced at them and made it appear as if he didn't see it, as if he did see it, he didn't approve of it. But in point of fact, someone had said that he was stifling a laugh, and he thought it was pretty funny. So that again is, they just moved this again, Phil, into a coffee shop.
Yeah, I'm noticing there's a lot of, are you still in the bowling alley, though?
We're still in the bowling alley, but they moved the table here into the coffee shop. Pretty radical change. One minute I was out there, and now I'm here. Two guys came and picked me up and just dropped me here behind the table.
All right, where can people go to find you?
We're at a bowling alley near Times Square. It's a brand new bowl. I think it's called the Politan Bowling Alley.
The Politan Bowling Alley?
Right on Times Square in New York City. And we'll be signing the books here for the next... How long are we here for? For the next 25 minutes, and then another author is coming in, and so on.
All right. I'm sorry that they keep moving you around there, Mr. Boone. Is it Dr. Boone?
It's not Dr. No. It's not.
All right. It's William Boone, and he is the author of a book that doesn't have a title, on the American Continental troops going across a river and then mocking the British because the British couldn't get across. Now, do you know what happened? What did they do to mock the British?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know.
All right. Well, what we know is that General Washington thought it was very funny, and he looked back and pretended like he didn't see them, but apparently they didn't drop their pants or anything like that. We're familiar with William Wallace, and William Wallace is the one who was the one that pulled his pants down or something.
I don't know.
Well, in the movie, yeah.
Yes, in Braveheart, that Mel Gibson had him do that, but we don't know for real if that happened.
Oh, that's another Mel Gibson movie. All right.
Yeah, Mel Gibson did a couple of those historical films. He did the Patriot. He did Braveheart, and
right. He played Braveheart. He played the Patriot, but he didn't play Jesus. He didn't play Jesus.
No, he did not. He had another actor play Jesus, which I think speaks very well of Mel Gibson. A lot of people think that he is an anti-Semite and filled with hate and is an ego case, but you'll see he passed up the big one, you know.
What does that mean?
What do you mean, what does it mean? We have a guest on the line.
Look, never mind. All right, so the scuttlebutt, the historical scuttlebutt, tell us?
Well, what the troops did?
Yeah, what did the troops do?
Well, the best way I can describe it, the scuttlebutt is that they thumbed their noses, they went, pretended in a very effeminate way to jump around, you know, very childish things like that. Now, they didn't drop their pants, but they went, you know, like that.
And that's the anecdotal information.
Yes, ma'am. That's the anecdotal information that when the British... I know that I probably should have done more research, but...
Maybe that's why they got you in a bowling alley there instead of a good bookstore.
It's possible. I got the book done. I'd heard the story. I thought it was a very interesting story, and I wanted to get the book done. So you make a judgment call. You make a judgment call on these things, Mr. Henry, and I... you know, forgive me, but I did the best I could.
Well, all right. William, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to your book when it is made available out here in the West Coast. Will you be coming out here for a signing?
I am hoping I will.
Will you have a title for the book by the time you get out here?
I'm hoping that I do. I'm sure that we will. I'm sure this is a mistake that was made. And
well, yes, it is a mistake, and you ought to get the book company... You know, if I were you, I'd ask for my... I was going to say ask for my money back. You didn't spend any money, did you?
No, they paid me.
Well, if I'd ask them for my money, I'd get... their money back from you.
Well, good luck, because they spent it. So, your move. What's the next question?
My move? No, it's your move, my friend. It's your move. And I'll tell you something else, my friend.
Yeah?
All right, thank you very much, William.
You see, guys like that, you know, they're begging for it. They want it all, and they want it now. And they want it wrapped up in a fist size, you know.
Who booked that?
I did. I thought it was a very interesting story.
It's an interesting story, bud, when the book has a title and when the guy knows what he's talking about. Sounds to me like it's one of these e-books. I got money that says it's an e-book. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I think you're right.
Now, what is an e-book? I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, give me a break. Margaret, you know what an e-book is?
Why would I know what an e-book is?
Margaret, the e-book is something that has been out for quite some time. There's people making big money on e-books. Electronic book. They're online.
Oh, that is child's play. No, I don't. E-books are for people that don't know how to write. And now things are falling together. Yes. All right.
Yeah, well, e-books are for anybody. Anybody can write a book. You know, the whole idea behind the technological revolution.
Wait. Here's where Phil's going to give his speech now.
Yeah, Mr. Sam, you already gave this speech.
Well, I'm giving it again, okay? The whole idea behind the technological media revolution that I've been telling people about, and it's not that I needed to tell anybody about it. Most people get it. In the world of talk radio that I was living in, it seemed like I had to tell those people, you know. The whole idea is that there's been such competition for readers, for viewers, for listeners, that all kinds of platforms have been traversed and all kinds of methods of advertising and methods of delivery and all kinds of different content has been tried. The ebook and all other things like it bring us to a place in history where now anybody can be a writer. Anyone can be an artist of any kind because the tools are available to them.
And I say, and I take the Oliver Stone point of view, that it just isn't special anymore. And I'd like to, if I could not extrapolate, I'd like to illustrate, I've got a problem with a 50-plus-year-old woman twirling herself about like a slut.
What are you talking about?
This commercial for the lift-up light where they make your big sagging jowls.
Oh, yes, they've got the women twirling around like they've got, like they're all that, you know?
Yes, I don't think a 55-year-old woman should be pooching her butt out.
No, they're not. She's got on a full... She's fully cognizant.
What does that mean, fully cognizant?
She's got her pants on.
You mean fully dressed?
Yeah, fully dressed.
You don't like a woman in her 50s acting like she's enjoying life. Okay. You know, that's your problem.
I don't have that problem, Phil. You know full well what I was saying.
No, I don't know what you're saying. A woman twirling around and looking happy and she looks like a slut? And just like at the beginning of the show with that song by In the Moment, oh, here comes the slut because she's singing a sexy song. You know, people and artists are, everybody's packaging.
See, look at how Phil stubbled. You don't even know where you're going with that.
Phil, you were making a good point, but I've got to give it to, I give Margaret that round, you know, because you started out strong and then the dick, excuse me for saying this, Margaret, the dick just went boo, you know.
Yeah, it's like you lost the hard on.
Hey, come on, will you?
Well, I think in this instance it applies.
Okay, great. So I came out strong and the dick went down. Jesus.
You want to know, General?
Why, how about that? You apologize for that right now.
Well, you're saying some bad stuff there to Miss Henry. That's not right.
You apologize? I take Cialis, okay?
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do. You ask Patsy whether or not I bring the lumber. God damn.
Okay, so now we know all about your sex life. That I did not want to know. Believe me.
Well, I don't want to know about you.
And nobody's telling you about me, man. I take Cialis.
I do. And that's after the Viagra wore off. Let me tell you, I can take a bottle of that shit, and it ain't good enough.
So, in other words, it doesn't help?
Oh, yes, it does, but I've got to take a couple of bottles of it.
All right, General. Well, you know, you're not exactly a good advertiser for that.
Oh, why don't you? What do you know, you know?
Yeah, you're from Hunger. Let's go get a vanilla.
There they go off to get their vanilla wafers. Man, oh man, I'm telling you. What else is going on? So that was fantastic. Don't we have to take a break? We've gone through this whole half hour without a break.
I think it's because you were playing all that music that it just, you don't need the break.
Yeah, what about that, Missouri?
Maybe. Maybe we, maybe we can keep on pushing through here. What else has been happening? So we've gotten into the story from the soccer. I know the story that we didn't talk about that I want to get into, and we're going to have Vernon Dozier on next hour and possibly Art Griego, is to talk about this kid that hid in this the wheel well of this jet that was going to Hawaii. The boy was looking to run away from home, and in the process of looking to run away from home, the boy, you know, wound up in the wheel well of this, just somehow made his way onto the tarmac, as they call it. And this kid was, you know, there he was. He was just nice and tidy. I don't even know how cozy you could be in the wheel well of a jet at 38,000 feet, but I'll tell you something. It doesn't sound like it was safe. It could very well have been a disastrous conclusion to that kid's trip, and yet he did survive, and as they say, survived very handsomely. This is Phil Henry here. It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and philhenryshow.com. Coming up our next half hour, so we'll talk about that. We have Bobby Dooley's podcast coming up as well. I don't know where I am. I don't know what I've been doing. I don't know why I'm so freaking out of it this morning. What's happening here?
Well, yesterday you were in a fog.
Totally in a fog. All right, so, the wheel well story coming up. Oh, by the way, we congratulate KingNut99, who is the winner of this morning's iPad, the giveaway on our iPad on our pre-show. So we've given away two. We got three more to do. KingNut99, is that the guy's name?
Yeah, I got to double-check. My dick is KingNut.
KingNut is from Grass Valley, California. Another sunny day, I feel like getting in the water. Why did you have to let me? Hi, this is Ward Blondell and Blondell Electronics sponsoring this portion of the Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico in Southern California. If you'd like your home completely rewired, top to bottom, start to finish, we'll put wires where they never were. We'll have light sockets in places you couldn't imagine they could be. And I'll tell you this much. If anything burns down this year, it's a lie. Someone has done that on purpose to make me look bad, because we've just brought our business back from three separate lawsuits. We're doing fine at Blondell Electronics.
What is that?
The music?
No, that picture behind you.
Anyway, welcome back. Phil Henry Show. Who was that that band, bud?
That good band. It's called the Kirby Twins.
Get out of here, the Kirby Twins. They're called That's the new one from Death, Go to Hell. I don't know the name of that band, but anyway, it's a pretty good group. And anyway, welcome back here to the world famous. What is the name of that group? Slaves? Is that the Fire Down Below?
No, that's another one. That's called Drown.
Yeah, I get it. All right, so welcome here to the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And the image that we had there behind us, which was about as grotesque a thing as you've ever seen in your life, that was, I forget what that was. That was a picture of, I think that's Russian TV. Oh, God, that was scary, wasn't it?
Yeah, what was the lady? What's she doing?
I don't know. They're interviewing somebody. I'm not saying anything. I shouldn't say this. The Russian people, they're fine people, and they're just like everybody else, although they've had their asses kicked a little bit more. So it tends to...
I think it shows up in the genes. I think when you look at the Russian people... They are a very a sturdy people, a tough people, a good people, a clean people, a people of determination. By the way, the name of that group is Theory of a Boatman. I think is the name of that.
Theory of a Boatman. The name of the group is Theory of a. I can't see that, man. I need my glasses. All right. This show, we might as well just leave this show right now for all the theory of a dead man, a boatman.
You want to ask me? You should ask me.
I don't know. Where the hell were you?
Getting a cup of coffee.
Well, then I can't ask you, can I? All right. Vernon Dozier is going to join us here as we talk about the kid that stowed away in the wheel well.
I'd like to know, is Vernon going to be brought on every time, there's anger to be had at a young person?
Well, Margaret, why don't you let Vernon do what Vernon do? Why don't you let Vernon do...
Let Vernon do what Vernon does.
Let Vernon do what Vernon does. Or let Vernon do what he do, you know? I want to say stuff bad.
Yeah, okay. Four men on trial in Detroit mob beating. Steve Utash was beaten after stopping to help a child he'd helped by accident. He was kicked, punched... and nearly beaten to death. He's now out of a medical-induced coma. The man was almost beaten to death when he stopped to help a child that he had accidentally hit. Well, I'm not going to be the guy that says, look at what's happened to the world, because this is the kind of thing that's been going on since the beginning of time, you know?
Well, wait a minute. Why do you say that?
I'm saying it because it has. This is not the first time. You would swear to God that most people think the 20th century and the 21st century are the very first time in the history of the world that people got beaten to death or that people, mobs attacked people. It's not. Mob violence is as old as the human race itself. And mob violence was worse back in the day. I mean, it was worse. When I say back in the day, 19th century, 18th century, mob violence has always been with us. People act as if this is a new thing. If anything... We deal with it much more quickly. We deal with it much more justly. We deal with it. Now, you see these four slobs? These guys that almost beat this man to death that are on trial, and look at this guy, he's smiling. These guys couldn't care less about a kid getting hit. They could care less. All they cared about was finding some poor sap in a car and beating the guy up. They don't give a damn about the child. They probably didn't even know the kid.
Well, won't you feel like with a jack ball if you find out that they did?
Well, I don't know. All right.
What about that, Mr. Henry?
I don't care if they did know the kid. You know, I don't care if they did know the kid. The first thing you ought to do is try to help the kid. Second thing you ought to do is go get a cop or at least get a hold of this guy and hold him for the police. But to almost beat the guy to death, and then you think that somebody is going to... someone is going to come along and give you a hero's... I bet you some of the slobs these guys know might have given him some sort of a hero's, reception. But not in a civilized world, okay? Now, let's get on here. Vernon Dozier. Vernon is with, Belmar Academy. Vernon, I thank you very much for joining us. How you doing this morning?
Oh, it sounds like you're doing a lot... doesn't sound to me like you're doing a lot worse than I'm doing, Phil, but I'm feeling pretty good, and I do appreciate you having me on your program.
We're going to talk here about this kid that stowed away in a wheel well of a jet. I say the wheel well of a jet. I don't know the whole story, but 38,000 feet is how high this thing got when he eventually was discovered. The plane had landed. but he survived the elevation, and that gets pretty cold up there. Obviously, the air gets pretty damn thin, and there's all kinds of problems that someone can have at that elevation. You work with kids all the time, Vernon. You know, what makes them want to run away from home?
I mean, a kid is going to want to run away from home for a lot of reasons. You know, they feel they're being abused physically. They might be abused physically or sexually, or it could very well be that a young person wants to run away from home because they think that that is a romantic thing to do. I think a lot of kids relate, you know, to the maybe they don't remember specifically reading books like Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer or this kind of thing, but it's still, you know, we're still talking about a time and a place where it seemed romantic.
I remember they used to talk about running away to join the circus.
Yeah, you'd run away to join the circus. I didn't hear that one.
Right, yeah, they'd run away to join the circus and become a clown, an elephant trainer.
Or they'd become clowns.
Yeah, well, they could go, whatever they want to do. I'm not familiar with what the job availability is in a circus. I don't even think you can run away to join a circus anymore, can you?
I doubt it. They don't have circuses the way they had in those days. But that was the mythology. You know, kids would run away from home to join the circus. They'd do anything they could to get out of the very terrible situations that they were in.
Yeah, well, and that may very well be. I don't know. But to go from a bad home life, Phil, to go from a place where you may have a parent that is abusing you, and to climb up into the wheel well of a jet and not be intending suicide, that only says one thing. That's a young person that wants to put themselves through even more torment and hell. And so you start to wonder, did they really have it bad at home? And the answer to that question is no, they didn't. So I think what you're finding is...
Well, wait, hold on for a minute, Vernon. What do you mean, no, they didn't? How do you get that from the fact that the boy was in the wheel well of a jet?
Because if the child was really being abused at home, Ms. Gray, and he was being beaten up and kicked and sexually abused or whatever you'd have me believe, then why is he going to make it worse by putting himself into the thin oxygen of 38,000 feet and almost freeze to death? See what I'm saying? It doesn't make any sense unless the kid...
What about being a sadism?
You mean like a masochist?
Okay, is that what you mean, bud?
Yeah, about a masochist.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think the kid is a glutton for punishment. And to me, it sounds as if, you know, we're talking about someone who there's something wrong with a guy that likes being beaten up but ain't good enough, so he wants to go and, you know, he wants to go I don't know what you would say. He wants to go and feel what it's like to be in the wheel well of a jet.
You know, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know why, but it sounds pretty dumb.
Now, what are you talking about?
It sounds dumb. I don't think I've characterized anybody as dumb here, Phil.
All right, wait. Let me say this. If a kid is, I don't know, I think we're getting further and further away from the essence of what we should be. We should be talking here about security. Well, I know that we have you on, Vernon, to talk about young people.
Yeah, they wanted me to come on to talk about what it's like to what can it possibly be like for a young person to want to climb up into the wheel well of a jet. And I'm telling you, they have a masochistic, they want to know real pain. They want to know new ways to get beat up or abused. And I'm not even blaming the kid. I'm saying he might have lived in such an abusive environment that he begins to crave it.
And so he goes and seeks out new and different ways to feel abuse and pain.
Yeah, I'm with Phil on this. It sounds like you're going in the wrong direction.
I was asked to come on this program to talk about young people.
No, you were asked to come on the program for the right reasons, Mr. Dozier. I'm not complaining about that. The conclusion you're drawing here, so you base this on what?
I'm basing it on somebody said to me, would you go on a Henry show? Right. And
I know why you were asked to come on our program. I'm asking you, you were asked to come on the program to get into the mindset of young people. You're right. So this is not, we're not talking about security. You're absolutely right. I guess what I was expecting to hear is, why do kids run away from home? Why would a young person put themselves through this? You know,
I'm telling you,
I guess I thought that it would you would focus more.
Well, if you want me to do something that you want me to do, Phil, I'm happy to do that.
No, I don't think we want... We're not asking you... We're not trying to be the authority.
Well, if you want me... If you people want me to say what you want me to say, I'll say that. if you're asking me to say what I want to say, that's what I'm saying right now. You're asking me to base what I'm saying on my expertise as an adult working with young people, and I'm telling you that this kid, if he comes from a home where he was abused and was looking to get away from it, it don't make any sense, because he immediately put him into an abusive situation. He was abused by the wheel well. He wasn't abused by the wheel well. He was abused by the airline. He went, as crazy as this sounds, he was abused by his parents and then went to the airline for more abuse by not going inside, but decided to stay outside. I would tell you this. If this is a young man who's looking for more and more exotic abuse, you know, I would go into the main cabin.
Wait, can I interrupt you?
Hold on. I would go into the main cabin. I'm going to make a joke, but I've been sitting on this since we went on the air, so I'd like to get it out. I'd go into the main cabin and get the two best-looking flight attendants and say, let's go in the back and say that, I guess it's probably not appropriate because he's a young man, but...
No, it's not appropriate. And again, I go back to what Phil said. We're getting further and further away from the point here. We're talking about if this boy was abused, he was looking to get away from the abuse. So he ran away from home. All right?
Yes, he ran away from home by climbing into the wheel well of a jet. You're not hearing me. See what I mean?
Well, you're not hearing us, which is he was... I see your point.
Now, see, Mr. Vernon, Mr. Dozier, you have... It seems like you've got a pretty good. You're a man who is a very good. You say things good, but it ain't.
It's not coming out right.
What do you mean? Who said that?
I did, Vernon. It's me, Phil Henry. It doesn't sound like it's coming out right. You know, you're saying that the kid ran away from home because he was being abused, but somehow he had an appetite for it. So that means he was a masochist. And I think that's wrong because you're blaming that boy.
No, hold on. No, I'm saying the kid had gotten to be, had abused him so much that he was mentally unsound. He was looking for more exotic ways of abuse. And so he went to the place that he'd never been abused, which was the airline or the airport.
What do you mean where he'd never been abused? What are you talking? Can you cite any psychologists?
Whoa, hold on. Now you're getting me. Now I'm getting angry. I'm a teacher.
No one is trying to anger you, Mr. Dozier. We want to know the basis of the conclusions.
Hold on. I'm a teacher, and I've got experience with young people.
What is your experience with young people that tells you they go from an abusive, they get so abused at home that they crave it and hunger for it and want more of it?
You've never heard of a woman who gets abused by a father and goes out and marries the same kind of scumbag that she was raised by? You've never heard of that?
I've heard of that. Yes, I have. All right, I have.
All right, there you go. Bingo.
No, but there's a different point I want to make.
Bingo. See, no, there's no, I just said it and I just proved my point. All right, so there's really no going back on that. I proved my point. And
no, I've got one more thing I want to say here.
What? This has not got anything to do with finding the same abusive situation. This is finding an abusive situation that's bizarre.
What? Say that again.
Margaret just said if that kid was abused by his parents, the literature would tell us that the kid goes out and finds a similar, he's looking for love from people that are going to treat him the same way that his parents did.
Yes, only in this case, it's... You know, every time I come on your program, Phil...
No, not every time you come on my program. I'm asking a question. If the kid is looking for the similar abusive situation... Then why wouldn't he go for a similar abusive situation?
I'm telling you that he did. Only the airplane took the place of his dad. I don't know. When Dickman called me up, and I put this on Dickman, he said, we want you to come on the air and tell us about why a kid crawled up into the wheel well of a jet, and I threw some stuff together.
Yeah, I tell you to make up some weird theory.
I'm not making up any weird theory. Now, you take that back. Take it back right now.
All right, take it back, but it's
a weird theory, Vernon, and I'm not going to take that back, but I will tell you, I know that you're, you know, doing your best with what you got.
What you guys gave me is a story that's so weird. Look it, man, I got a class to teach. I'm trying to get a little bit of FaceTime on your radio show, and he threw me not just a curveball, he threw me something that comes right out of a joke shop. it wasn't just a sinking curveball that he threw me. He threw me one of those Three Stooges joke shop knucklers that goes up and down. How am I supposed to hit that? So I did the best I could. All right, the kid was abused. Goes, finds a jet. It reminds him of his dad. He goes up into it and tries to get his ass kicked.
All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, who was laughing?
You got the TV on there.
Hey, Bill, turn that down, will you? Turn it down, man. How many I Love Lucy's have you seen? How many I Love Lucy's have you seen? Turn it down. So,
Well, you know what? That's the goofiest thing I've ever heard in my life. I refuse to accept it, although you know you'll always have my love and respect.
All right, well, that's fair enough.
All right, thank you very much, Coach. Vernon Dozier, who said that the kid who climbed up in the wheel well of the jet did so he could find a more exotic and more interesting abusive situation. I think that we have come to the end of the line here, don't you?
Well, what do you mean?
I think we've done all the damage we can do, you know.
Well, Phil, speak for yourself. I think the program started fine. I think it got out of control when you were thinking more about giving away that iPad than you were about doing the radio show.
Not a radio show. Mr. Henry keeps saying it's called
it's a podcast. All right, look. No, nothing got out of control. I'm just saying that there's just a lot of stuff that's been happening here the last 24 hours in terms of giving away the iPads and some of this new, I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe we got out of bed on the wrong foot. Maybe we got out of bed on the right foot. Maybe. We're going to see you guys tomorrow. It is the Bobby Dooley Show coming up next year. The Bobby Dooley Podcast coming up next year on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Join us again tomorrow morning, 8:30 Pacific time, for our all-access backstage pass show so that we give away another iPad to one of our BSPs. In order to listen to the all-access backstage pass show, you have to have a BSP. In order to win one of our iPads, you have to have an all-access BSP. Congratulations again to KingNut99, the winner of this morning's backstage pass iPad from the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The Bobby Dooley Podcast is coming up next. Long live the heart, long live the soul, that knows what it wants. Woo-hoo! That peace you can't find, that part is a whole, and it never lets go.
Welcome to the Bobby Dooley Podcast. We always bring our podcast on in conclusion to the Phil Henry Show because we always feel like Phil can use a little bit of help, and this morning is no different. Welcome anyway here to our Western Estates Homeowners Association headquarters. We're at the Community Center here at Western Estates, California, in the Community Center, where we are holding forth. I'm a little upset this morning because of some of the behavior of our eldest son, Justin. I was talking to him. Dylan is our eldest, our second oldest, Justin. Justin is going to be the oldest next year after Dylan graduates. And Dylan then is planning on living with his grandparents in Irvine. And going to school at the University of California, Irvine.
If he gets in.
He'll get in, Steve. Oh, God. So Justin this morning, actually Justin's our youngest, so it was our youngest, the behavior of our youngest, yes. Dylan's fine, Seth is fine. He's our middle one, and he will be the senior next year. And Dylan will be the freshman at the University of California, Irvine. Don't say anything, Steve.
Well, God, all right, fine.
But it was my very youngest this morning who so disappointed me. When I had said to, and I know an awful lot of you parents out there have young people like this, when I had said to Justin, honey, mommy would like you to make sure before you leave the house this morning to make your bed. It is something that I don't demand of the boys all the time. I, to be perfectly honest with you, don't demand it hardly enough. But Justin is the one who needs, I think, a little of this organizational skill, some of this discipline. He's a little scatterbrained. We are thinking that he may need some medicating. We're not exactly sure what yet, and I'm sure a lot of you gals know what I mean. And Justin also is our third, the one that we had made the mistake to inoculate, and I blame myself.
No, we hadn't inoculated two older boys, and God damn it.
All right, well, don't blame yourself, Steve. I don't blame myself. Our two older boys, Dylan and Seth, we did not inoculate. We did not put through the immunization program. I had read a number of the books by Jenny McCarthy, and I'd read a number of other books. I hadn't actually read all of the books, but I'd read the pages. I'd read pages of chapters that a lot of my girlfriends had said you should read. And Jenny McCarthy had recommended them too. And so I read what I could, and then so we didn't inoculate Justin and Dylan and Seth. We didn't inoculate then. Justin we did, because then we heard that, oh no, you better inoculate them. Because we heard, no, it's a big mistake. Go ahead and inoculate. So then we did. But then what happened, Steve? Because I lost track.
Well, but then we went, oh yeah, wait a minute. Maybe we better not.
Right. So what we did do is we didn't inoculate Dylan and Seth. We did inoculate Justin, because then we heard, yes, you better, because Jenny McCarthy, it had come out that Jenny McCarthy had, as you know, I don't think this is any secret, she's had an awful lot of she had a lot of premarital sex. I mean, a lot. And when I say a lot, I mean not just a lot, but with the likes of people like Tommy Lee. So
she had a lot, and it was a lot of it. When she did get it, it got good, and she got it good.
Yeah, she had a lot, and when she did get it, she got it real good, or maybe not good, but she got it a bunch. It was big when she got it. So that, we thought, had bruised perhaps some of the brain a little bit when there's all of that pounding. I don't know. You know.
Well, I think we just think.
We think that when Jenny McCarthy had had the amount of premarital or extra, the amount of sex that she had was bruising to the brain because of the head. I know a lot of you know what I'm talking about, and I don't.
Well, you mean her head hitting.
You go ahead and say it, Gene.
Her head hitting the backboard.
Yes, her head hitting there was the pounding. We thought the brain had we thought the bruising. The brain bruise, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, she had brain bruise.
She had brain bruise. So that when her brain bruised, she thought that she should not inoculate. And I went, oh my God. So that's when we had Justin inoculated. Then later on, we found out that no, her brain was good because she wrote another article about it. You know, Steve?
Yeah, well, on account of she wrote another article about it, we thought
that the brain bruise had not been that bad.
That the brain bruise, thank you very much, Gene, that the brain bruise badly beyond being boo. Oh, God. Why can't I do it?
I'll do it, honey. We thought that Jenny McCarthy had brain bruise. Now I find out she wrote another book about inoculation. And there wasn't no brain bruise. That's how we felt, you know.
That's right. That's right. So we went and we had Justin inoculated. Okay. now we're hearing that maybe she does have brain bruise and we shouldn't have had Justin inoculated. But in the meantime, Justin, when I asked him to make his bed, I wish I could show you the face because we don't have the Phil TV picture that we should. But when I said, you need to make your bed, he went like this. See if you can hear in my voice the way his face looked. He went like this, like that, you know? So it squinched up.
Yeah, it squinched up. It got into smart ass. It squinched into smart ass and eyeball roll.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I said, my God, I had inoculated you to save you from coming out like Jenny McCarthy's kid did. And you repay me by giving me eye roll, curled lip, squinch face, and an urban teen grunt. And I was so absolutely put out with him that I could not help myself. And by the time Steve pulled me off of him, I had delivered. But Steve.
Well, Dylan and Seth had counted three forehands, three backhands, and you closed your fist twice to the mouth.
My youngest, I did this to. Now, I'm crying not for him. He's fine. He's going to be okay. We put ice on the mouth, and we actually took a cold pack and just adhesive taped it to his jaw and his mouth, and I made him go to school like that. But I'm crying for myself.
Yeah, my wife's a very peace-loving woman. We're going to have a spring tackler. And our youngest son done that to her? No way.
Yes.
You understand, don't you, Gene?
I do. I understand perfectly. My wife and I are also the parents of a young adolescent, and it is there's no excuse not to understand what parents go through and not give us at least the option to have the young person put into an induced coma.
For a number of years.
Yes, to live through that.
So I... When I said, honey, make your bed, and he went, wah. Oh, I could feel it. I felt I was independently moving. My mind left my body, and I witnessed myself jump him, and I dove. What I saw in my mind's eye, Steve, because I wasn't doing it. I was out of body.
No, that's all right, honey. You were out of body, and you didn't know.
I was out of body. I saw myself dive, knock him out of the chair, pin him to the floor with one knee on each arm, and then in a very methodical way, one forehand, one backhand, one forehand, one backhand, one forehand, one backhand.
That's right. That's right. And then?
And then the closed fist, boom, boom.
Right. And then I pulled you off of him.
And then my husband pulled me off of him. We saw him laying there, holding on to his jaw and pushing teeth back into his mouth. I went and got a cold pack. I instructed Dylan, the eldest, to put the cold pack, go get the adhesive tape. We taped it around his head with the cold pack covering his mouth, picked him up by the collar and the belt loop, shoved him onto the bus, and said, get out of here. I told the bus driver, don't slow down, just kick him out at the front door to the school and let that be. And I just broke down because I saw Mary Trudy saw me.
It's going to be okay, honey. Apparently, my wife did see one of the Circle of Taste ladies, saw her do the whole thing.
Yes. So I'm very upset. I tried to keep it together. I did the best I could with what God gave me. I've done the best I could with the kid what God gave me, the three kids that God gave me. I've done all I can do with them. I don't know what he wants me to do. I put the cold pack on the kid's mouth. I booted his ass. Ooh!
Bobby Dooley's Wardrobe by CNN. The Bobby Dooley Podcast is a presentation of Siempre Incorporated. Executive producer Phil Henry, all rights reserved, on the Sideshow Network.
I'm so very, very sorry.